So we're going to discuss what is called the Arba Parshios, the four Parshios, that some of you may be familiar with it a little bit, some of you may not be familiar with it. Just a show of hands. Who is not familiar with the four Parshios? Okay, three honest people. Four honest people. I'm not saying you aren't honest. I'm just saying that hands up is for sure honest. The other four, you could be honest also. Just... and maybe you may know about it, but maybe we'll give a little bit more depth to it. So with the four parshas, we're in the midst of it. And this is really, you know, gets us out of the winter and gets us into the spring, as it were. So it's called the four parshios. Oh, so let's make this a little larger again. Okay. Let's get big screen. Okay, in the month of Adar, there are four parshos that are read after the weekly parsha each Shabbos. We take out two Sefer Torahs. First Sefer Torah, read the regular Torah portion. The Maftir, instead of repeating the last part of the regular Torah portion, is read from a second Sefer Torah. So the Maftir on the first Shabbos after Rosh Chodesh Adar, really should be before, I don't know why it's after, that was a typo, I'm not starting good over here. Okay, before Rosh Chodesh Adar is called Parsha Shkalim. The Maftir on the second Shabbat after Rosh Chodesh is Parshas Zohar. The Maftir on the third Shabbat after Rosh Chodesh Adar is Parshas Parah. The Maftir on the fourth Shabbos after Rosh Chodesh Adar is Parshas HaChodesh. That's just in general. There's four of them. Regarding the obligations, we will see that hearing Parshas Zohar is a biblical mitzvah that women should make an extra effort to attend. Most poskim hold that the obligation for Shkalim and Achodesh is rabbinic, so it's not as critical. I mean, it's good to hear all four of them. And Parah, there's a debate. Some say it's biblical, some say it's rabbinic, so people make a greater effort to hear Parshas Parah. Okay, what are the basic themes of the four Parshios? So Parshas Shkalim is to remember the mitzvah that the Jews had to donate the half shekel coin when we had a Beis Hamikdash. Now, why do we read it the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar? Is because every year, the Jews, every male, 20 and older, would give a half shekel coin of silver, and that would pay for all the communal offerings that were needed for the entire year. The fiscal cycle for Jewish korbanos was from the beginning of the Jewish year, which the beginning of the Jewish year is the first of Nisan. So you have to collect 1 month before the first day of Adar, you have 30 days to collect everything. So therefore, that's when they would collect. So therefore, we read that portion, the Shabbos before that, so to remember the fact that we gave a half shekel coin at that time. And there's still a lot of spiritual benefit. We know, if even though we can't do mitzvahs nowadays, if we read the Torah portion about that mitzvah, we're able to access some of the spiritual energy that comes with that mitzvah by reading it in the Torah. So that's why we read this before Rosh Chodesh Adar, to get us to know this would be a time where we would be collecting the money for the offerings. Parshas Zohar is to remember the myth of destroying Amalek and its proximity to the story of Purim, because the whole Purim story was another battle between a descendant of Amalek, Haman, and the Jewish people, which the Jews thought were victorious in destroying Amalek, which is part of the mitzvah that we have to destroy Amalek. So we would read it to Shabbos before Purim. Parshas Parah is in commemoration of the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, that was done at the inauguration of the Mishkan. And also, we would need that to get Jews to ready get themselves purified before the Pesach holiday. And that serves as a prayer that Hashem should purify us as we're now getting closer to Pesach. Parshas HaChodesh tells us about the very first time the Jews had the mitzvah to sanctify the new moon. And when was that? When did that happen in Jewish history? On Rosh Chodesh Nisan. First of Nisan. Hashem showed Moshe what a new moon looks like and says from now on the Jews will sanctify the moon. So therefore it makes sense to say that reading for that as well. Even though we don't actually sanctify it today, but it's already been pre-sanctified, but we keep that in mind that we have the ability to do this. Now, interesting, if you missed reading the Parsha, you can't make it up. You can't make it up. If that Shabbos, you didn't hear it, you can't, well, can I read it on Tuesday? No, you can't read it. You get it or you don't. Now, this is a fascinating thing that many of you are not aware of. Here are the basic rules of when the parshios are read. Now, they never come 4 weeks in a row, but there's no consistent year after year to know when they're coming. Like, it's not like 4 weeks in a row. It's not every other week in a row. Every year it works out different. So we're going to teach you the rhyme and reason for it. And it's a very easy rule to remember, and you can remember this. Okay, Parsha Shkolim, the one we just read, is read on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh. And if it's a leap year like this year, it's the second Rosh Chodesh. Or if Shabbos is Rosh Chodesh Ador, then it's read on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Ador. So it's always read before Ador or on the Shabbos. So that's the starting point. Okay, next. That's not Rosh Chodesh Adat. And my spell check will not recognize Ador. Okay, now, Parsha Zohar also is always read the Shabbos before Purim. Okay, so since this year, Rosh Chodesh is Friday, Thursday and Friday, so we read Shkolim last Shabbos. Okay, but Purim is still not for a couple weeks. So this coming Shabbos, we're not going to read Parsha Zohar. We're going to read it the next week, because after the two Shabboses from now, Purim is going to be on a Thursday. It's always the Shabbos before Purim. It's possible if Rosh Chodesh Adar is on Shabbos, right? So then the next time you read it, you could do Zohar right after. It's theoretically possible, but usually it's going to be a week in between. Now we're going to skip one for a reason. You figure I should tell you the rule about Purim first, but I'm not. You'll see why. Parshas Achodesh number 4 is always read on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Nisan, because that's all about the month of Nisan, which was the first month that we sanctified. So why am I doing Purim next? Because here's the rule. Parshas Purim is always read on the Shabbos immediately before Parshas Achodesh. Even though calendar-wise, it could theoretically be read 2 weeks before with a break in the action. But it always has to be connected. That's why we do figure Parshas Purim. Once you know when Chodesh is, Purim has to be the Shabbos. Those two have to be back-to-back. The others, Salis could be, 1 and 2 could be back, 2 and 3 could be, if possible, don't have to be. 3 and 4 have to be back-to-back. And the only way we can calculate it is by knowing that number 4, HaChodesh, is on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and then Purim has to be the Shabbos for them. Why is that? Did you know that there was such a... You didn't know that. Okay. Now, before I get to this, here's my nice little calendars. You can see it. No, it's good enough. You'll see there's only 4 possible ways the calendar can go. Because Pesach can only come on 4 days, and therefore it's only 4 possibilities. So let's take a look. Possibility number 1, you'll see how this plays out, that the first day of Rosh Chodesh is a Shabbos. Okay. So you're going to read Shkolim, because that's the first day. Then right away the next week is Parsha Zohar. You know why? Because the next Friday, the 14th, is Purim. So you've got to read Zohar. So there, they're back to back. Now you have to have a break. And then, since, let's jump, the 29th of Adar is going to be HaChodesh, because that's the Shabbos word. So then the 22nd is Parah, and you see they're back-to-back, and you have a break in the middle. Right. So it's a simple rule. If you read Shkolim on Shabbos, the first two go together, there's a Shabbos break, and then the next two go together. On the other hand, let's play it another way, like it is this year, is the second calendar. This year, Rosh Chodesh, to say, is Friday, is the first. So we read Shkolim last Shabbos. This coming Shabbos, we're not going to read because Zohar is too early. So we read Zohar the next Shabbos, and Purim will be on the 14th, which will be Thursday. Again, then we can do Parah and HaChodesh. Then we take a break after Purim. That Shabbos, we don't do it. And now Parah and HaChodesh go together in those 2 weeks. Follow? Another possibility is if Rosh Chodesh Ador is on a Wednesday, so you read Shkolim the Shabbos before that, and then 3 weeks in a row, Zohar, Parah, and Achodesh. Because that fits the rules. Zohar is read on the 11th of Adar, because Purim is on the 14th. And since Achodesh is going to be on the 25th, Parah gets, you got three in a row. Similarly, if Purim comes out on a Monday, same thing. You'll read Shkol in the Shabbos of four, and Zohar, Parah, Achodesh in a row. It always, the rules are always consistent. Shkolim always before or on Rosh Chodesh Adar. HaChodesh always before or on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Zohar always before Purim. Para always before HaChodesh. Interesting. Why is that? You may ask. Or you may not ask, but it's still, why is it? The Jerusalem Talmud says the following. We do not interrupt between Parah and HaChodesh. We must read these, the third and fourth of the four parshas, on consecutive Shabbosos. You think I'm so smart? It's just the Jerusalem Talmud. Reish Lakish said a sign for these parshios is between these cups of the Seder. We're making a connection of this and the four cups of wine. What's the rule? Well, between the first cup of wine and the second cup of wine at the Seder, if you want to drink something, a little interruption, so to speak, you could do that. Within the second and the third cup of wine, like there's a whole meal in between, you could have something. But between the third and the fourth cup, you can't have anything. When you drink that third cup after benching, besides, unless your mouth is dry, just have a little bit of water, you don't have another cup of wine, you don't have anything, you just go, whatever, when you're finished with challah, you go into the fourth cup of wine. So that's a fascinating similarity. So there's some connection, obviously, between the four parshios and the four cups, which are compared to what? The four expressions of redemption when we went out of Egypt, right? The four expressions, I will remove you, I will save you, I will redeem you, and I will take you. So now we got an interesting connection. So obviously, what is being said by the Jerusalem Talmud? Well, we're getting close to Pesach, and we're trying to relive the redemptive process of going out of Egypt, just like there's four expressions of redemption. So these four Torah readings are paralleling and helping us in some way access four expressions of redemption. That's really what should be going on in our minds as we are reading and hearing these parshios that are read on these Shabbatos. So it's not just we just read it for the sake of reading it. We're trying to get ourselves into redemption mode. So one of the great Hasidic masters, Rav Tzadok HaKohen, explains how this works. He says like this. He says the first three of expressions of redemption, we're trying to get out of Egypt, trying to get out of what's bad in Egypt. Now, besides the simple interpretations that God, you know, he stopped the backbreaking labor and we were able to leave Egypt and the God split the sea, which is all, yes, definitely events that happened, but there's also spiritual character that we're improving on. So what Egypt was a very immoral place, and we call the shells of impurity, as the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, jealousy, lust, and arrogance take a person out of this world. One who has those three is very much a slave to their body. Those are the big three. Jealousy, lust, and arrogance. That does you in. You're a slave to your body. You're never going to be free. Right? And that's where the Jews were exposed to in Egypt. And all year long were exposed to Egyptian ideology through the course of the year. The fourth expression, which God says, I will take you, that's the redemption itself. So now, our sages came and taught us that after removing ourselves from the impurity of Egypt, you know, just like that, when a person's free, that's when you're the most dangerous time. Because when you're free from oppression, you can do whatever you want. And sometimes you don't make good decisions if you just become free. So therefore, after that third expression, you go right to the fourth expression. You go right to the holiest of the Torah, which is implied in the parsha of Achodesh Hazeh Lachem, this month Nisan is for you, the power of Torah, that you can, Torah can even let you control the universe and when Rosh Chodesh comes. And that really was the first mitzvah the Jews got that led us to our connection to God. So as soon as you're free, it's a very vulnerable time. So just like after that third cup of wine, we go bam, into the fourth cup of wine to connect to God. So the same thing is happening over here. So let's just develop this a little bit further. It's really a fascinating idea over here. But you're going to see what's going on over here. So we're trying to remove the shells of impurity that jealousy, lust, and arrogance have upon us that do not allow us to experience freedom. So guess what? Shkalim, Zohar, and Para, in one way or another, if we internalize the message of those three readings, that will remove the jealousy, the lust, and arrogance from upon ourselves, and then we'll be able to cling to God. Why do we have trouble clinging to God? Because when you're jealous of things, right, and when you're lustful of things, and when you're arrogant, those are such like earthly types of manifestations. You're so distant from Hashem, you can't have a relationship with Hashem then. And you're not going to be freed from this. You're only freed from this when you connect to Hashem. So each one is dealing with one of these items. Now, how do we know what it is? Well, Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells us that what is real wealth? Now, we know people get very jealous. Jealousy usually often revolves around wealth. Not exclusively, but it's a pretty good one, right? So we got to know what real wealth is. And the same thing for lust, you know, and other things. So true wealth is being happy with one's portion and not envying the wealth of others. Makes sense? What about strength? True valor is being able to conquer your Yetzirah and not to beat up somebody and take what he has and lust for what other people have. Because that could be very powerful people and want what other people have and take it from them. You know, imperialistic countries are very powerful, but really it's just lust and power. That's all they want. And what's true wisdom is the willingness to learn from every person without worrying about compromising one's pride. One needs to have real good humility to be able to have real wisdom. Who is a wise person who's willing to learn from anybody, even a little kid? Okay, so let's see. The prophet Yirmiyahu says, what should a person praise himself? Let not the wise man glory in his wisdom. That's not Torah wisdom. Let not the valiant man glory in his strength. And let not the rich man glory in his wealth. Those are all jealousy, lust, and arrogance going to get you in trouble. Rather what? For only in this, in knowing and understanding Hashem. That's what you really should be involved with. So now, I couldn't put everything in here. So if you look at this, well, what does Shkalim deal with? Giving a half shekel money. It deals with wealth. Because you understand you have to give to others. You know, the Torah says that the poor man who is with you, you have to give tzedakah to him. And the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that God gave the money of the poor man. You know why the rich man has to give to the poor man? Because God really gave the money of the poor man to the rich man. And it's the rich man's job to return it to the poor man. That's really what the whole mitzvah is. That's really what the hef shekel coin's all about. You think you got a whole thing? You only got half, because really the other half belongs to the other guy. And that will cut down. And also, the half shekel coin comes to remedy the envy that Yosef's brothers had towards him. The Medrash says they sold their brother for 20 pieces of silver, so every year you're obligated to give the half shekel coin. So that whole half shekel coin and the idea the rich man can't give more than the poor man, he only gives half. So that deals with wealth. In an improper way. That deals with going against jealousy. The wealthy man is happy with what he has. So if you internalize the message of Parsha Shkalim, you'll have true wealth and not the wealth that takes you down. So that's step number one. We move on to Zohar. Zohar relates to strength and valor. Well, who's really strong? Someone who can conquer his Yetzirah. Well, when Amalek attacked us, how were they able to attack us? Because we had gone 3 days without studying Torah. And we were weak. And we know that Torah is the antidote to the Yetzirah. So now Amalek came and attacked us. So what did Moshe do? He raises his hands up because Moshe, with his hands, gave us the Torah. Right? And therefore, we relate to true Jewish valor in terms of what's the real strength? Not following your lusts and using your strength to get the lust you have, but rather to conquer your Yetzirah. And that really is the battle against Amalek. So now we read Parsha Zohar, we understand where our strength really lies and not in the areas of lust. And when we come to the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, which we know is something that is beyond human understanding, and the secret of it was only divulged to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he gained more wisdom than anybody else because he was so humble. And even the purification process of the Parah Aduma is the Kohen takes cedar wood and hyssop. Why does he take cedar wood and hyssop? Because when he purifies people, sometimes we become impure because we're arrogant like the cedar tree. We need to be humble like the hyssop. So there's the humility that comes with Zot Chukat HaTorah. This is the law of the Torah to understand great wisdom. So you see, the cure for the three impurities of jealousy, lust, and arrogance is being happy with your lot, being able to conquer Yetzirah, and having the humility to learn from others. And once you have all of those three, then you're ready for the redemption. Then you're ready for HaChodesh to start a new leaf, to change, to be able to take on the whole Torah and mitzvahs and get close to Hashem. And that's how we're trying to move forward in all these, and the Torah readings help us get this. This just gives you some frame of reference as to where these four things are taking us. I think that's an important idea. Now, let's get into some specifics. And it's really fascinating. There's many mitzvahs that revolve around this. According to the Rambam and many others, we'll quote the Rambam in a minute, we read, now let's just make sure we all know what we're talking about over here. This is the reading of Zohar. Now, I'm going to focus on Zohar. That's coming up. It's only three psukim near the end of Sefer Dvarim. First pasuk says, we have to remember what Amalek did to you when you were on the road to leave Egypt. And what did they do? They met you by the way. They struck you at the rear. You were tired. You were faint. And he did not fear God. And then God says, and when Hashem's going to give you your land and you're going to have a rest from your enemies and you'll conquer the land of Israel, then you have an obligation to blot out any memory of Amalek. Okay? And not to forget. Very short reading. But what's the message over here? So the way the Rambam and many, many poskim understand it is as follows. There's three mitzvahs in that reading. Number one, a positive mitzvah. Mitzvah say to remember the evil that Amalek did. Number one. Two, a lo saseh, a negative commandment, not to forget what happened. We have to see what that means. And the third is the mitzvah of blotting out the people of Amalek, called Mechias Amalek. Which on the simple level, when the Jews so to kill them all. Okay, now this is the words of the Rambam specifically. It's a positive commandment to destroy the memory of Amalek. It's also a positive commandment to constantly remember their evil deeds and their ambush of Israel to arouse our hatred of them, more of what they've done than them. That's what it says. Remember what Amalek did to you. That oralty, remember with your mouths, and you have to say something, remember. Do not forget in your hearts. You're not allowed to forget our hatred and enmity for their cruel designs for the world, as it were. This is not just a Hatfield and McCoy thing. Oh, when we came to Egypt, they're the first ones to hit us, and we're never going to forget it. This is a world struggle. You know, we champion God in this world. Amalek is the anti-God. And anything that's good from Hashem. They don't want the whole world. They want what's bad for the world. So this is a titanic struggle. And we can't forget that struggle exists. Now, the fact that the Torah repeats the idea, says, remember and not to forget. Remember, where else does it say remember? Well, remember the Shabbos, right? And how do you remember the Shabbos? By verbally making Kiddush. You fulfill this. So we have to verbally say something that helps us remember that. Now, many authorities derive from the doubled command that the Torah requires to review this declaration annually, since after a year one might forget. The Talmud says after a year you forget something. So if we don't review this at least once a year, we'll forget it. Now, many poskim understand that the mitzvah of remembering Amalek is requiring to know the laws involved in destroying Amalek. The Torah says you have to destroy Amalek. According to that approach, the mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek, remembering Amalek, is primarily a mitzvah of learning Torah. Learn the Torah that teaches us the laws of what it is to mean to destroy Amalek. On the other hand, most authorities seem to understand that the mitzvah is to take to heart the evil that Amalek did and represents, that still exists, And it's our responsibility to combat evil in the world and help make the world a more godly place. Okay, that's a little bit less violent, but just as important. Now, why I'm Amalek more than everybody else? Because we know when we came out of Egypt, everybody saw the hand of God. Everybody knew there was a powerful God. Amalek said, big deal. We'll go fight them. It doesn't matter. Even though they lost, but they gave a good slap on the face of the God of the Jews, and that cooled down everybody's fear of the Jews. So can you imagine that? The greatest event that happened, and they say, big deal. Not impressed. So that is definitely anti-God. And they were the only, and that's gone from the beginning of time, that kind of feeling. So that's why they're so bad. It's interesting, the Gemara Megillah identifies a nation in the times of the Talmud. And you're going back about 1,800 years ago, and they call a place called Germania. And they identified as descendants of Amalek. Okay? So, now we know the problem is, well, where do you... So theoretically, if there was a person walking down the street and he had an Amalek gene, like, shining from his forehead, we'd have an obligation to kill him. Okay? But that's never going to happen. Why? Because when Sanherib came during the First Temple era, he conquered the world and he mixed up all the nations. So it's not clear who's an Amaleki now. So because we don't know who a real Amaleki is, the mitzvah kind of falls into disuse on that level. However, the Gemara said there's a nation called Germania as its descendants of Amalek. And another class for another time, there's much sources to suggest that Germany is, yes, descendants of Amalek. No coincidence, the terrible, terrible evil and atrocities they perpetrated, Bedafka against Jews, more than anyone else, would be a good indicator. It's an interesting story. There was a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. I met him many, many years ago. His name was Rav Gustman, Zichron Levracha. He's already died many, many years ago. And he was a great, great rabbi in Vilna before the war. He was part of the Vilna Bezdin. The Nazis came in 1940. They went to Vilna. They just massacred everybody. They killed every rabbi of the Bezdin in Vilna, every rabbi. And they beat Rav Gustman up, and they thought they had killed him, but they didn't. He was unconscious. Somehow he woke up, went into the forest, etc., etc. It's a whole story what was going on in his life. And to make a long story short, so he wanted to join the resistance, the, what do you call it? The partisans. And this was a big rabbi. Everyone said they were sheep to the slaughter. Not necessarily. So he said, he wanted to join the partisans. I said, you want to join the partisans? You have to have a gun. If you don't have a gun, you're not worth anything. We don't need a rabbi here. So he had to get a gun. So what did he do? He was a very strong man. So he ambushed a German. He killed him with his bare hands. Rav Gustman killed him with his bare hands. And he had the gun, and he was in the... with the partisans. And years later, he would always look at his hands and tell his students, I fulfilled the mitzvah of destroying Amalek with my bare hands. And he once saw an Israeli soldier disassembling and reassembling a rifle, and he said, I could do it faster than you. So there were certain rabbis who definitely felt that Amalek was Germany. And there's many, many stories. And if you went, there were certain rabbis who told Jewish soldiers, American soldiers, to not be afraid to go to battle in World War II because you're fulfilling the myths of killing Amalek if you kill the Germans. Anyway, but again, nowadays, we just don't know. We can't. I'm not saying we should go to Germany and start killing everybody over there. During the war, it's a different story because then killing is allowed, so to speak. But clearly, as Rav Moshe Feinstein says, we're not equipped to fulfill that active part of the mitzvah. But certainly we want to eradicate the trait they displayed of acting cruel and presumptuously against God in the face of all reason. So that mitzvah applies even until today. Okay, now, hearing Parsha Zohar again is a biblical mitzvah. Therefore, one is required to arrange that he be in an area that has a minyan for that Shabbos. In addition, one must have in mind to fulfill the biblical mitzvah upon listening to the reading. You have to have that in mind. That's going to be in two Shabbos. The mitzvah is to express this commemoration verbally. Therefore, the person reading from the Torah must have in mind to fulfill the obligation of the listeners. He has to have in mind to do the mitzvah. He wants to fulfill everybody's obligation to have the mitzvah. They hear it. It's like they said it because they listened to him. The one reciting the brachas of the maftir for zachar, the blessings on the Torah, should have in mind to fulfill the requirement of the entire congregation to recite the blessings on the Torah. And all those present should have in mind to fulfill their obligation by listening to him recite the blessings. Interesting, although it's a mitzvah to do this, we don't make a special bracha on the reading itself. We make the bracha on the Torah for the aliyah, but we don't make a special bracha on that. Why? Because we don't make brachas for things that we have to kill people over. Just like we don't say the full hallel on Pesach because the Egyptians were killed. We're not happy to have to do certain mitzvahs. We'll do it, but make a bracha on it already, we're not going to go that far. It's customary, but not mandatory, to stand for the reading of Zohar. Now, if one can't make it to hear Parsha Zohar, let's say you're sick in a minyan, you just can't. Then you should read it out of a chumash if you know how to do the trup, the cantillation. You know, to read it with the cantillation, that would be next best. Now, there is a debate. The word, is the word in the end zecher or zecher? Where am I? Where do I want to? If you look, right, second last line. You see there? I can't make it bigger. It says zecher with an A by the Zion. But there's a debate if it's zecher or zecher. Now, since it's a biblical mitzvah, we want to cover our bases. So therefore, some say the word zecher, some say zecher. So it's proper to read it twice. Either you read the whole pasuk twice, or read just the one clause, like zecher amalek, zecher amalek. Or Timcha as Zecher Amalek, Timcha as Zecher Amalek. Now it's interesting, this reading really is in Parshas Kisisa. So Kisisa is always read annually in about August. So when we read it then in August, even though it's not the official Parshas Zecher, the custom is to read it Zecher with a Tzera. And when it's a leap year, interesting, there's an interesting question. A leap year is 13 months. We say you forget something after 12 months. So what's happening? It's going to be 13 months from the last Zohar to this Zohar. So many say, with the fact we read it in Parshas Kiseitse, which is in the middle, so you get an extra reading in between. Mm-hmm. Also, an Ashkenazi should hear Parshas Zohar, should not hear Parshas Zohar from a Sephardic Baal Kori, and a Sephardic shouldn't hear the Parshas Zohar from an Ashkenazi Baal Kori. Since it's biblical, you have to do it according to your traditions. Some say this is only preferable, but after the fact, when it's fulfilled one's obligation. Some say that one should hear the same dialect of Hebrew one speaks, and the minig is to be concerned for this. So, you know, I know you like to be let people with different dialects, but you have the one that's similar to yours. It's important that one understands the general point, and one fulfills one obligation, even when one doesn't understand every word. If you even don't know what every word is, but you understand the notion of those three mitzvahs that we said before, you have fulfilled the mitzvah. Some say that one misses one word, one has not fulfilled one's obligation, while others hold that as long as one heard the main point of destroying Amalek, one has fulfilled the obligation. Some poskim rule one must hear the blessing with intent to be Yotzei in order to fulfill the obligation, the blessings of the Torah. Others say that it's not necessary. Some say the congregation should read along as the Baal Kori reads Parsha Zohar, while others say better to listen, and that's the more common one. Let's skip that one. 24. Someone who has already fulfilled his obligation and he read it can still read it again for a different congregation. There are many different views as to whether women are obligated to hear Parsha Zohar in shul or not. Different opinions. So, therefore, women should try to. They should try to hear it in shul with a minyan. That would be the optimum way. But if they can't, they can't. A woman's got little kids and can't get out of shul, she can't. So some poskim write that she can fulfill her obligation by reading it out of a chumash. If she's with kids, she'll read out of a chumash. Some poskim take a sefer Torah out a second time later in the afternoon if all the ladies come and hear it for a special reading. Others say that a woman can hear, fulfill the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar by hearing the Torah reading on Purim morning. On Purim morning, before the Megillah, they read the battle of Amalek, so then she can fulfill her obligation by hearing that. And children who have reached the age of chinuch should be brought to shul in order to hear Parsha Zohar, as long as they don't disrupt. And there we squeezed in a whole little bunch of laws over there. Okay.